Continuing with our conversations of years past, Joanne Parker, Mark Lemoine with us, talking about a show they did at Bradfordville Blues Club back in October of last year. Sue Cerulean will listen to her talk with us back in April of 2016. And then I've got Nada Hassanin, who is a reporter for the Tallahassee Democrats. Stay with me, folks. It's going to be a great show.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
So once again, we have gathered on this fine occasion to celebrate things related to Tallahassee in some way, shape, or form, including the Bradfordville Blues Club, which for its historic contributions to our welfare has for its life hosted some of the more remarkable musicians from around the country, blues musicians and others. Joanne Parker was one of those who was with us back in October of last year, and we had her talk at length about her career, her beginnings as a musician in a church setting. She was like a music director for a local church in her hometown, went on to discover her voice as a blues artist, and she had with her Mark Lemoine, who was an accomplished guitarist and a fellow vocalist. They team up on this whole thing. Really a remarkable conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. That comes up in the second hour. And prior to that, we'll have this conversation with Sue Cerulean. This was back when she was making her appearance at Word of South and had then received another award for her work from, I believe, Florida. I forget the name of the organization, but this is a woman who has won several awards and has published several times. This latest contribution being recognized, entitled, I Have Been Assigned the Single Bird, A Daughter's Memoir. And you know what? That book in and of itself is already being slated as another likely award winner, in which she chronicles her own journey with her ailing mother, where she's caring for her. And in that capacity, I said mother, I'm sorry, it's her father who was afflicted with dementia. And during that whole ordeal in caring for him, she took opportunity then to kind of weave together her fondness for birds and her long-standing appreciation for the natural world as a bird lover and a writer. So the book itself is getting all kinds of neat, noted award sort of possibilities. Florida Book Awards is the other category I was thinking of. Anyway, she is by training a biologist and actually holds a master's from the University of Florida, but has gone on to be this remarkably contributive author. And in addition to that, she has been highly accessible, and she's made herself available locally here, and she's got a gig coming up at the Midtown Reader August 7. So just a week from now, she'll be there. There's a it'll actually be a Zoom gathering, so you can look for that, and you can Zoom in using the Zoom app if you want to be a part of that whole conversation August 7th. And it is sponsored by, I should say, Midtown Reader, not located at Midtown Reader. I'm trying to get my facts straight here. So that's what's going on with that. Other announcements for you as well coming up. Let's see here. News from the county. They're going to reopen Meridian Road sooner than originally planned. That's got to be good news for all of those folks living up on that north west side of town. Meridian Road between John Hancock Drive and Timberlane Road has experienced some temporary closure to try to deal with the persistent flooding and water quality concerns. So it was originally scheduled to begin June 1st. They got the thing started sooner than that. And so this is a good thing. The county accelerated the project to align with less traffic on the road during the coronavirus pandemic. And then we have a quote from Commissioner Brian DeLoge. He says, "I'm proud of our county's continued investment in infrastructure, especially during the pandemic." And anyway, a news item then, if you're affected by that on that part of town, and they're looking to get that wrapped up here pretty quickly. So we will move on in our news summary, trying to give you these announcements as they come to us here on the news desk, or as I rattle papers for you, so you know I'm actually looking at this stuff. It's all just a big ruse. According to the Center for Disease Control, growing evidence supports ending isolation and precautions for persons with COVID-19 using a system-based strategy rather than a test-based strategy. So this update includes recent evidence of the period of isolation and precautions recommended to prevent the spread of COVID-19 to others while limiting prolonged isolation and unnecessary use of laboratory testing resources. Now, so the most critical changes are these. Except for rare situations, a test-based strategy, which then means that they've acquired a negative test result, is no longer recommended to determine when an individual with COVID-19 infection is no longer infectious and can no longer spread the virus to others. Wow. So for more information, they want you to visit a website, cdc.gov, and then you go to coronavirus, and then 2019, probably look for a link there. The other criteria having to do with symptoms, symptom-based criteria were modified as follows. If there's been a change from at least 72 hours to now, and they've moved that up to at least 24 hours from now. So in other words, they're shortening the time during which symptoms may have occurred. Since the last fever was actually experienced. So that's a pretty significant change. Also, they changed from improvement in respiratory symptoms to improvement in symptoms in general. And that's to address the fact that there's a growing list of symptoms associated with the infection, which could be nausea, diarrhea, and other things. Now, for those of you who are employers in relation to those employees in your firm, your business, it says this: employers should utilize the new symptom-based criteria to determine if an employee can return to work rather than the test-based strategy. So somebody comes and says, "Hey, boss, you know, I got myself tested, negative results on the test, so I'm good to go." CDC is saying, no, time out. Look for symptoms. The test-based strategy has not has proven not as effective and can be unnecessary in relation to the use of testing materials. The symptom-based strategy is more effective in determining a person's probability of being able to spread the disease and thereby if they are safe to return to work. Now, you can also call for more information. If you want to call the COVID-19 Center in Florida, that number is 866-779-6121. Or you can email them at covid-19@flhealth.gov. If you want to contact the local Leon County Department of Health, that number is 404-6300. Folks, we're going to continue this conversation. I've got plenty of good stuff for you today. Nada Hassanin is standing by with a conversation we had some time ago, so stay with me.
Witten Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Witten Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Witten Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Witten's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Witten is known for taking care of business. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
As promised, we are going to begin today's show with Nada Hassanin, this newly arrived newspaper reporter, Tallahassee Democrat. Remarkable individual, interesting history, personal history, and I think you'll enjoy hearing the conversation I had with her as she talks with us about her role at the Tallahassee Democrat and her view of Tallahassee. Let's take a listen.
Well, I guess the first place to start is what it means to be the trending topics or a trending topics reporter. Tell us what that means.
Sure. So it's a bit of an evolved version of the general assignment reporter. So, you know, covering things that people are talking about around town and also localizing.
Well, that's what we do. That's what we do here.
Oh, right. Tallahassee Talks.
This is a perfect match then.
Yeah. Okay, oh, perfect.
Good.
Perfect.
Good.
I'm in my element then.
You are. Well, we should just get you here. That way you could tell us what everybody else is talking about, because that's what we always want to know. We're very nosy then.
Yeah. Well, you know, journalists are nosy too. And you know, what's interesting is it's also kind of involves localizing national headlines. So kind of how national topics are affecting local people here in Tallahassee and the Tallahassee area.
Right.
Yeah.
And relatively, I think, you're new to the community.
I'm about 5.5 months in. So.
Yeah, just now within the nuptial period of your introduction to this city. How has that been for you? Well, give us some of your first observations, I guess.
Sure. I definitely feel more of a relaxed person being here than in Orlando. I do miss parts of Orlando. Of course, family and friends are there, but you know, you have to take the highway pretty much to get from one side to the other, and it was kind of a shocking adjustment here that I didn't have to take toll roads, and you know, I was only 7 minutes away from work. So definitely smaller, more quaint. You run into people kind of more readily around town.
Smaller population.
Yeah.
Closer proximity.
Yeah.
Does that help us or hurt us, do you think?
I think it helps. You know, I guess it's kind of a cup half empty or half full. You know, it's all about perspective.
It has its trade-offs.
Oh, definitely. But
I mean, there's just some people I'd rather not run into every day.
Oh, yeah.
Just to be honest. And I'm sure it's mutual. So, I mean, there he is again.
There you go.
Somebody said to me, you don't have to put on your turn signal because we already know where you're going.
That's a really good one.
Well, it may be true. These days, there's all of these topics that you covered, the trending topics, What are some of those, I guess, that are most prominent?
Sure. So within my first couple months of working at the paper, I started getting involved in this refugee project that we started working on. So kind of profiling local refugee families here in Tallahassee. And as you know, it's quite a trending topic with, you know, the new, with all the executive orders being issued and start in, you know, in January and that kind of thing. So we wanted to see how, you know, refugees were acclimating in Tallahassee and kind of their stories, what brought them here. So, you know,
what have you discovered thus far?
Sure.
Among those?
Yeah. Well, I was responsible for profiling some of the Syrian refugee families here in Tallahassee. And both, despite coming from the same war-torn country, have, I guess, really different stories. And, you know, one of them had a very, I mean, they're both very sad stories, but both very different backgrounds in terms of what they experienced in the country before coming here. Their lives were very different from each other, but, you know, and so I think that kind of was something I tried to convey, that despite coming from the same country, they both have their own unique stories.
Well, and those stories having to do mostly with their experiences because of the civil war in Syria, right?
Yeah, yeah, and also just kind of how their daily lives were. You know, one of them owned a family business that was ransacked by the regime. The other family, the father was an electrical engineer, and they moved across the border and had to work as an electrician in Jordan. So, you know, just different upbringings, different you know, livelihoods, I guess you could say.
When you talk with these people, do they refer to themselves as refugees, or do they feel like at some point they're going to get to go back home?
That's a really great question. I there is definitely a sliver of hope within them.
They would
my
rather be home than be here.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, you've spent 40 years in a country, and all of a sudden you have to pick up your family and just leave, you know, just to keep them safe. And it's interesting that you ask about the word refugee. No, actually, they a lot of them don't necessarily like to refer to themselves as that. And I think it has to do with the Arabic connotation sort of around it. It's a painful word.
Really?
It's a painful word.
What would you say is that connotation? How is that perceived, I suppose?
Well, the reality of what brought them here is what, you know, the connotation reflects. It's just one woman I was speaking with, one Syrian refugee, I was asking her if, you know, people in the mosque obviously know that she's a refugee, but she said, "I don't like the word refugee," she said to me, just very sternly. And she said, "I know that I am one, but I don't like the word."
Because it connotes what?
It's kind of a reminder of all the pain that they went through. And that's my interpretation of it, and kind of what I got from her, gathered from her story.
What is the future for these folks that you've talked to? Are they here on some provisional terms? Are they here permanently? What happens going down the road for them?
That's a great question. they are here, you know, starting a new life. I don't think, you know, that same woman told me she wished she had taken pictures of her home if she knew that she wouldn't be able to go back. You know, it's, and that kind of, I feel like, illustrates exactly what they're going through, that this is their new home, but they're still grieving their former one.
Yeah.
Tallahassee Democrat reporter Nada Hassanin from a conversation back in 2017, not long after her arrival here. I hope you're enjoying the show today, folks. Stay with me. I've got Sue Cerulean with us in this next couple of segments, and you are going to have a great time, so stay with me.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557. More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Word of South Music and Literature Festival is coming upon us very quickly, my friends. And as it goes, this lovely festival, along with many other fine festivals in the month of April here in Tallahassee, is contributing sizably to not only the landscape, we'll say us as a community, but is drawing attention from across the country with people bringing their various talents and gifts in music, in literature. One of Tallahassee's favorite, one of our very own, is one of those authors, Susan Cerulean. She's our guest this morning. How are you, my friend? Good to have you with us.
I am great and glad to be here.
What a pleasure. She is the author of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change, a provocative title, I might say. So that just makes me want to just stop what we're doing right now and start reading this book. But we don't want to do that at the moment because we're getting to know this marvelous person. Sue, you have been writing for a while. You're pretty well published. Tell us about your beginnings as an author.
I actually began as a young girl as an editor.
Ah.
I edited my sixth grade newsletter. And I edited lots of different things all my life until I felt like I wanted to explore my own voice and what my own passions are, just as you do. And so I would say that in this kind of writing that I'm doing now, it's probably been about 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in that time, not only this, now this is your latest book, Coming to Pass, but then you have this other one that you're responsible for, Between Two Rivers. But that's an anthology, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was edited by you and Janice Ray. Ray and Laura Newton. Just a word about that, Between Two Rivers. Again, a provocative title. Stories from the Red Hills to the Gulf.
I think that lots of your audience members probably know this book because it got a lot of play in our area, but I'm finding that it continues to be of interest to new people in Tallahassee because it brings together voices, lots of voices, with different points of view and rooted in the place in a different kinds of ways.
Remarkable.
So you might go from the Rudlows at the coast to June Bailey White in Thomasville, and we're all linked in this bioregion, and an anthology is just a great way to bring together lots of voices.
Marvelous. In fact, I would underscore your assertion. We are a diverse people, are we not?
We are.
Many times I think that out from the outside looking in, people might want to characterize North Florida with a broad brush and in the sense that they are insensitive to or just unaware of the diversity that we benefit from, I think. We expect such things in larger metropolitan areas, right? Where you have people from various backgrounds and cultures and, as you say, points of view. Tallahassee benefits, I think, because we have attracted to us then people from various parts of the world who have made this their home. And that's increasing remarkably, and Word of South, I think, is helping to celebrate that as well. Your involvement there, this is your second year. Of course, it's the second year of the festival, but you were involved last year as well. And I know you did some work there with Velma Fry accompanying you. Tell us about what happened last year, if you will.
That festival appearance was a life highlight for me. It really was, because I've been singing in circles with Velma Fry as a student for 20 years.
Wow.
And I love her music, and I don't know how far you go back in this town, but for those of us who've been here a long time, her Friday afternoon evening gigs at the Alley were what we all waited for at the end of the week.
Yeah.
Now she's singing and composing more out of her home, and I knew that her music would complement my writing, because we've worked together as friends and colleagues just singing for so long. So what we did was we put together a medley where I would read a little bit, she would sing, maybe a cappello, and then I would read a little bit out of my book, and she would do the thumb piano and sing, and then she would do something with drums. And music, even more than words, I think, music makes a heart connection, and you know, so that's how you get people to cry. That's how you get people to be drawn in to what they love about a place. And that was our goal.
It's often quoted that, you know, people will forget what we say, but they will always remember how we made them feel.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think you're right. I think that when it comes to those connecting pieces between us, those parts of ourselves, music is that conduit, right?
Yeah, that bridge that we were talking about. But I think that that's what Mark Muschin and Mandy Stringer were after last year. And there weren't a whole lot of those sort of duo acts. But if you look at this year's schedule, they've got some fabulous things coming up. Pierce Pettis is going to be singing with Janice Owens reading, and I can't wait to hear that one. There's a number of Bob Shakokas is going to be reading with somebody that I should know. And I think they're getting more and more into blending the arts to just like open us up like a bunch of Tallahassee flowers.
Yeah. Well, in that respect, we spoke of this diversity. I noticed that too, that among the lineup of authors and musicians, the diversity is remarkable. I mean, you've got people from, you mentioned Pierce Pettis, you've got some pretty substantially recognized music groups. Dawes is going to be there. Didn't they just win? Somebody won a bunch of Grammys lately, and I don't remember exactly which one. I think they all have. But if that's the case, how do you think that impacts us as a community? When we look at ourselves, right? Our self-awareness, let's say, as a community, how is it that this festival, do you think, impacts our perception?
Well, if it's put together right, and I think it has been, it acts as a mirror. We are uplifted by all this heady art that we're able to listen to. And then we have a chance to reflect outside in that beautiful Cascades Park and think, this is the heart of who we are. And isn't this just amazing?
It is.
You know, and let me just jump in with another act that I hope people
Please
will
do.
See. The Currys. Do you know the Currys,
I
Brian?
Don't. No.
Don't miss them this year. Two brothers and a cousin from over along Port St. Joe coastline. And they do a lot, almost all original music. I heard them last year for the first time there. They are really grown from this ground, and you'll want to hear them.
As an author, and let's talk a little bit further about this, the book Coming to Pass, Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change. What is this about?
Well, this book was born out of my love for our coastal islands. And the wonderful thing about being a writer, claiming yourself as a writer, is that you get to, almost every good piece of writing allows you to begin with a question. And so my question was, how did our coast come to be? You know, these islands that we love so much that are part of our identity in Tallahassee and Thomasville. Mm-hmm. And then my husband's an oceanographer, and I know a lot of scientists, and I grew up, I have a degree in science as well. Then I just started to go around and ask those people, so where did this sand come from? Where did this, you know, where do these beach mice come from? Where do these willets, what do they do? And as it evolved, I realized that it was a lot about my just watching, being there, being quiet, being on the edge and seeing what was happening and how people interact with what's down there. So the book began with a question 10 years ago. It took me places I never would have guessed. And I think that's always true with writing.
And a marvelous connection between our natural world and the human, right?
Yeah, pretty much everything I do is that way.
Folks, we have with us Sue Cerulean. She's one of the celebrated authors who will be at Word of South. Folks, you stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Sue Cerulean, this lovely young lady who has, for her many years, applied so many different areas of interest and talent as a scientist, as a singer, and most recently as an author, starting what you say when you were in sixth grade, editing the class newsletter or something, newspaper, right?
I think that's how a lot of us begin. We edit other people's words, we read other people's words, and if we're given the right opportunity, we can grow into our own voices. Mm. And I think that's what's happened for me.
Well, in fact, that voice is being used rather well, I would say, in this latest authoring of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change. You and Ann Rudlow had a good relationship, did you not?
We were colleagues. Yeah, I didn't know her as well as I would have liked to have.
Yeah. Jack has been on the show several times, and of course the whole Enterprise, Gulf Specimen Marine Lab and all that has been at our center of concern and interest, both for his organization, but largely for us as a community and for the natural world. And, you know, Jack is one of those folks, and maybe the person most of all, who has cautioned us and even been emphatic about what we are doing and what can not be taken for granted. We have to stop and realize there are no guarantees here, folks, if we are ignorant in our management of and our contributions to, positive or negative, that gulf that we love so much may not be the same. Mm-hmm. So when you wrote this Coming to Pass, was that kind of in the back of your mind that you had in fact a desire to make us more aware of just exactly what we've been given?
Yes, that was exactly at the heart of my work. I think it was a combination of concern and then love. You know, you can have a pure love for your place or your child or whatever it is that you're wanting to express. And those two things go hand in hand in this planet where there's 7 billion of us and we're really, there's too many for the earth to be able to accommodate. And you see that in South Florida. Mm. But in North Florida, It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And so these kinds of writings and the work that the Rudlows have done, and this other anthology you haven't even seen yet that we wrote some years back right before the Gulf oil spill, another anthology that's cautionary but also filled with love, young people to old people all along the Gulf Coast, writers who wanted to express what is so precious about our coast that we must not risk it. And I think that my newest book was my opportunity to just muse my own self about the coast, about the edge that we're on as a human species.
Mm-hmm.
And where better to consider the edge than the edge of St. Vincent, St. George, Dog Island,
indeed,
St. Mark's.
Indeed.
And that's where I'm writing about and coming to pass.
Indeed. And this particular book that I'm looking at, Unspoiled, the subtitle, Writers Speak of Florida's Coast. You're saying this was published prior to...
It was. It was just absolutely...
That's eerie, isn't it?
It was staggering. We got the idea for that anthology from the writer Terry Tempest Williams, who had put together an anthology to raise awareness of the Utah wilderness, the Red Rock wilderness, and we wanted to do the same for the Gulf.
Mm.
And that was published in April. I mean, within weeks. Within weeks, the oil spill happened, and we were able to spread this word widely because people were concerned.
In fact, when that happened, you must have absolutely been devastated to realize your worst possible fears.
It was. And like everybody else in our counties, you know, Leon, Franklin, Gulf, we watched every day for evidence of the spill on the beach.
Yeah.
My husband Jeff and I went down there, you know, often instead of doing what we normally might do to see what was happening. And we were very lucky here. Mm. But in Louisiana, it's
so
never going to go away. Yeah,
not
so much.
Yeah. Well, folks, the fact is we have with us not only an able author in Sue Cerulean and a contributor to this year's Word of South Festival, we have somebody who really loves this region and seems to have a tremendous love for us as well as for the natural world. For you, that must not always... Let me put it this way. I would imagine that you find yourself in some level of discomfort most of the time, because when I think of those people who are most able to contribute to the welfare of our own social world, as well as to the natural world, there seems to be many occasions when they don't. They don't pull the trigger. They don't say, hey, we can do something here because it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to pull back or look at their own self-interest. What are we not doing, I guess? Where else do you see us really lying there sort of ignorant or even insensitive?
Oh, where to begin? I think that one of the things that people are just coming around to now is understanding the effects of climate change and rising sea levels potentially on our islands and our coast in general.
Mm.
That's one area. Another is the use of fresh water. I'm a big supporter of Apalachicola Riverkeeper.
Mm.
And those folks work just as hard as the Rudlows to try to negotiate a way towards the proper amount of fresh water in Apalachicola Bay so we wouldn't have to grow oysters somewhere else, that the bay itself could do that if we had the right amount of fresh water.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting area to me, and where I feel personally on an edge, and you might even say a mission, is regarding birds. Birds are my main passion.
Okay.
And in the process of writing, I took a lot of time to just be there and watch, just kind of hunker down in the sand and become something not to be afraid of. And in watching people and in watching birds, I realized that as as a general rule, we are something to be afraid of, to be accommodated by every other species on Earth, and without their permission or their choice. So I'm interested in watching what other creatures need. That's the part of diversity that most interests me, Brian. Mm. I know that I began with the diversity of human voices. What I'm interested in now is trying to uplift the voices of those creatures that can't speak, like brown pelicans, manatees, dolphins, octopus, whatever's out there. Mm. Rivers, they all have just as much of an inherent right to existence by virtue of being created on this earth as we do. Mm. That's where I think we have a big disconnect, and that conversations with people can really shed light on. And people, most people, if you approach them from a spiritual point of view, whatever your religious practice is, it's spiritual to think of, we were all created, that palm tree in that picture, that child, that swallowtail kite. What do they need as well as what do we need? That's what I'm interested in.
And there is common ground, as you say, spiritually. We have in mind that there is inherently value in all that has been created, and a creator who would consider that a good thing, a good idea.
Yeah. Not just value, Brian, but rights, a right to existence. Mm. And that's challenging sometimes.
It is challenging. Well, she is the author of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change, one of the celebrated authors in this upcoming Word of South Festival, which comes up here April 8th through the 10th. Susan Cerulean, our guest this morning. What a pleasure and what an honor for me to be able to say that I am her newest friend.
And you're mine.
Folks, that's what I have for you here at the moment. You stay with me. I've got ABC News coming up at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Recall that we are available to you online all the time, TallahasseeTalks.com. All of the shows there archived for your convenience. As well, we rebroadcast the show Sunday afternoons at 3 on Moose Magnificat streaming radio, and again Wednesday afternoons at 5:30. So if you happen to miss in any way, shape, or form, man, we got you covered. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast from your favorite podcast app. Easy to do that. Just search for Tallahassee Talks, and there you are. Remember, too, that we're always available online at the website, because that's an easy thing to do. If you want to search for a given guest or topic, just go to the search bar there and type it in, and it'll bring it up for you. And some of these folks, like we've done today, are people who've been with us in days gone by. Joanne Parker, who's coming up here in this second half of the show, really a remarkable person in and of herself, and just some of the things that she will talk about in her own growth as a person and her own development as an artist. And having come in and done this one-night show, I guess she did a Friday and a Saturday night. I think that's how that worked out. So she actually did two shows there at the Bradfordville Blues Club back in October of last year. Fascinating individual who struggles with a lot of personal problems, just personal issues. And she's very, very frank about that that affect her performance in some cases or on some occasions. So it's a person who was pretty transparent, I thought, and rather supportive of the idea that people can best overcome adversity if they'll just acknowledge whatever it is they're struggling with. And so it was. Last week we had Andrew Gillum on the show from back in 2015 when he was then mayor of Tallahassee. And of course, I don't think too many of us have not noticed that Mr. Gillum went on running for governor of Florida, and then has come to grips with some of his personal issues, alcoholism and other things that he has sought help for professionally. And having come back to make some public statements for the first time since his treatment, brought to mind the idea that whatever adversity we face, I mean, think about this guy, you know, riding high, mayor of Tallahassee, a real celebrated sort of personality, a lot of people nationally recognizing his contributions, and then runs for governor. He loses the governor's race, kind of falls off the radar, and the next time that he makes any sort of public splash, it's under the worst of circumstances, perhaps, or at least less desirable circumstances. Certainly circumstances that were, I mean, painful for any of us to witness, and for him, no doubt, his family, his friends, humiliating at that. I mean, just a real sort of implosion. But yet he goes through where he has thus far gone through treatment and comes back to us to say, hey, I'm back. And I don't know what that means for him personally, but I know that in the broadest sense, for any of us, it means I am not going to allow whatever personal failure, personal problems, personal obstacles I face to thwart my determination to be the best version of me. You know, finding within myself the ability to stay in the moment, and it is a prescription for success, quite frankly. You know, and it doesn't matter who you read from. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's the New Testament, if it's Simon Sinek, whoever your fave is among those who are known for contributive self-improvement and such, yeah, I mean, there are ways in which even Stephen Covey might advise you. You can identify specific objectives in your life. Look for those places where the obstacles to your progress are painful. If it is an addiction, or if it is some catastrophic failure, if it's, I mean, whatever your deal is. You know, brokenheartedness is known to every human being. I don't care how high you're flying, man. You're still tethered somehow. There's still got to be somebody on the ground holding the string. And that string can easily get broken. That tethering can slip away from you, and all of a sudden you're really adrift. And you're scrambling. You're trying to find, what is it that really counts? What's important in my life? Who am I really, and why am I here? And what am I supposed to be doing with myself? Those are the three most critical questions, aren't they? Who am I, what am I worth, and why am I here? Yeah, and as I say, you'll find answers to those kinds of questions, more so guidance as to how to ask the questions and maybe how to find the answers from a lot of different sources. I think with Mayor Gillum, I think with our guest Joanne Parker, you're going to hear some of that. You're going to hear people talk about what it means to not just overcome, but find a new footing, a new way of being, new purpose in life. Yeah. Did a TED Talk some years ago that's online. You should look for it. And I entitled it Reinvention is the Necessity of Life. Reinvention. It's intended. It's purposeful. It's not an accident. You know, something happened to you or you did something and, oh, no, my life is over. No. The way we are best constructed over time is through reinvention. It's how we discover who we really are. And some of us come to that much more quickly, much sooner in life than others. But does that really matter? Because we're all walking out our lives, working it out day by day, week by week. The one admonition that I can offer you that I think is valid for all of us, is to stay in that moment. You know, don't keep hanging on to the past other than to acknowledge that it happened. And don't, you know, try to over forecast here. What if, what if, what if? Yeah, don't do that either. And especially when you're faced with something like a coronavirus or economic downturn or the closure of schools, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Let's deal with what's in front of us right here, right now. That's the best place to be every day. Take what you have in your hands. What can you work with? Who are those people you're connected to that you can talk with, talk to, call upon, refer to? Whatever those resources may be, take them in hand and go with it. Go with it. Who you are, what you're worth, and why are you here? Those are the most critical questions. Those are the ones I'm asking today. And one of the reasons I'm here is to help you stay in tune with this kind of thinking. Stay in tune with what Tallahassee really is beyond what we've imagined Tallahassee to be. Let's look at where we are, where we're going, and why. Let's look to one another as Tallahassee's best natural resource. Stay with me.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom-cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WhiddonGlass.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Joanne Parker is a classically trained pianist with a degree in music from the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. Growing up, she sang at church, and she was with a wedding band and did all of that music until some time back she discovered blues soul music. In fact, she says, well, blues really discovered her. And in that discovery, she found a style of music that was heartfelt, honest. She said, I didn't really know much about the blues. This is, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Based out of Minneapolis, she is songwriter, band leader, multi-instrumentalist. But she then says, you know what? It just clicked. And I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. Well, she's doing it. And she's doing it at the Bradfordville Blues Club while she's here. And she's our guest this morning. How are you, my friend?
I'm a little tired, but doing well.
You've been on the road a bit. Yeah. And you've had a pretty stout schedule of performances, not only including BBC. So talk about that, the discovery, the manner in which blues found you. This was after you having done a lot of other music, mm-hmm. right?
I was a worship leader in church for a while. I taught music for a while. I actually always wanted to have a band, but never really thought I would get there. And the whole band thing kind of just happened upon me. I was singing in a contest, doing Aretha Franklin, and a guy come up to me after and said, my friend's starting a band, and they're going to do this kind of music. You're really good. What do you think? And from there, it just started basically a snowball for me of discovering the blues and rhythm and blues. And I told you earlier when we were chatting that I feel like I was ready for it. And I went, where has this been all my life? And
right.
I just dug into it as far as I could, went way back. And yeah,
so
I
you're
loved
an
it.
Aretha Franklin fan.
I always loved Aretha, but she. Right. It, it didn't really click to me that that was blues. You know what
right,
I mean?
I grew up
in the middle of nowhere, and we didn't really have much of a choice for music.
I think it's not allowed, right? You know, it's like there's an ordinance against that.
Yeah.
A great song, too, Chain of Fools, was your choice in this contest you're talking about. Can only imagine how that felt. You're by any chance a Joe Cocker fan?
I am.
Yeah. I find that to be the case. A lot of times there's something very desperate, I guess, in that sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's this sort of scream that goes on trying to get it out there.
Yeah.
And you're going to do that with us here. We've got in studio Mark Lemoyne. How long have you and Mark been together?
5 years, I think.
Wow. 5 years, going on six.
Yeah.
Welcome, Mark.
Hello.
Glad to have you here.
Very, very glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. He's got his axe in hand, ready to chop some wood with us here shortly. And what a fine-looking instrument that is. Tell us about your guitar.
This is a modern recreation of a 1930s National Tricone. For the benefit of our audience and radio, who can obviously see this, it's made out of bright, shiny nickel silver. It's got three little 6-inch cones in it that make it sound brash, like that, instead of woody like a guitar. It's an extremely good instrument to use for solo and duo programs because it's very loud and articulate.
And if I'm not mistaken, you tell me, but the technology, we'll say, behind it, the craft that went into this predated, right, the electronic age, and yet as an instrument, it has all of that resonance, so it can project more strongly. Is that fair?
You have it correct.
Okay.
Making the lecture really short. the Dopiera brothers back in the 1920s decided that acoustic guitars need to be louder. And so they, instead of using a wood body with a wood top, the top acts as the speaker, they created these spun aluminum cones and they sunk them inside metal bodies. So it became much louder. The cones are the same thing as a speaker.
Right,
they vibrate, move the air.
Right. For you then as an artist, and we, Joanne, we're not really interested in talking to you anymore. Mark is much more interesting, so we're just going to shift away.
He always lampoons me.
Isn't that terrible? That's a terrible thing to say, but I'm known for that. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk about why you choose that instrument, and clearly there's a healthy respect. It respects you, but you have a lot of love for that that instrument there.
I do. My main focus in guitar playing is electric. I have a Gibson ESP35, which they will have to pry from my cold, dead hands. Right after that, they will have to pry my cold, dead legs out from around this National Tricone. This instrument was literally sitting in a guitar store up in Minnesota, and I hadn't really thought of buying one of these. And I walked in there, I picked it up, and it smacked me upside the head and said, "Take me home, honey." And I sold it one time. Joy, do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
I sold it one time and regretted it pretty much moment by moment until I badgered the other fellow into selling it back.
Wow.
So,
at the same price?
I may have paid him a little.
At that point, it was ransom.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Joy Ann Parker, you not only bring to your career as a musician all of this history and rooted in church music and worship music, when you find yourself at a place like the Bradfordville Blues Club, there's a kind of church there in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's very intimate. It's very, very close. Will this be the first time that you've performed there?
Yeah, it'll be
our first
time.
You're going to have a blast.
I've heard many great things.
You're going to have a blast. This is what Gary Anton is saying about you. Okay, you want to know this?
Joy Ann
Parker burst onto the music scene, and she now brings her phenomenally soulful voice to the corner stage, which is the way it is set up there in the BBC. You may not recognize the name, but you will never forget Joy Ann Parker after experiencing her performance. Joy Ann not only has the types, but is also a songwriter, producer, instrumentalist, guitar, piano, trumpet, with a magnetic stage presence. You perform at Bradfordville Blues Club. We're going to talk a little bit more after the break, because we definitely want to get to the music. We're going to have you do a couple of your soulful tunes, right, as they're described. Mm-hmm. Folks, you stay with me. We've got Joanne Parker and Mark Lemoyne right here with the Moose, Tallahassee Talks. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Joanne Parker, new to the Tallahassee scene, but welcomed by many who know her and her music, not the least of whom is, yes, Gary Antone and Kim, who for their inspired way of living have made it their business to curate the Bradfordville Blues Club all these many years, and they're still hard at it, and they have this remarkable ability, I would say. It's a skill, a gift, that they find people like Joanne, and somehow do they like promise to pay you?
We even get money. I know, crazy.
What they don't know is you'd be like, oh no, just let me just come in and do it,
I
man.
I would love to.
I mean, you're infected, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking during the break, and Mark's saying like, yeah, she's the real deal. She's never going to do anything else but this. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. I think I'm...
How do you know that? What's convinced you of that?
Well, like I said before, I think this happened at a time when I was ready. And it was like, I just knew I was ready. Like, this was it. And there's no... This is what I was put
what
here.
How did you know that? What happened? did you just get worn out with everything else?
I think there's multiple things. My children were older. And able to, you know, kind of be home alone.
Feed themselves.
Feed themselves.
That's always good.
I had been through enough stuff in my life that I could start writing. I'd never written music before, and all of a sudden I was writing music.
So we're talking stuff that broke your heart.
Yeah, yeah. And just life experiences.
Like a real person.
Yeah, having children. Having,
like every
you know,
one of us.
Yeah. But I was able to finally express it. Yeah. And I think over the last 5 years or 6 years, I have been figuring out who I am, and I'm 41 years old now, and I'm just coming into myself.
Come into that.
Yeah, going like, it's okay to be me. I'm putting all that old stuff behind me and just saying that was what it was then and this is now, but using all of it, you know.
Yep. I share this with you in that I'm 60. Well, I should start by saying I'm 64. You're not. And I share this with you that in the first 30 years of that 64, I spent serving in various churches as a worship leader, as a teacher, counselor, all these different roles. Mm-hmm. And I was miserable. Mm-hmm. And the people that I was with were miserable. The people in those churches were miserable. Some of the most miserable people I ever knew. And this is not one church. This is 5-6 churches over 4 or 5 different denominations.
Wow.
And they were all having the same miserable life. So when I was in my 40s, coincidentally, I was like, I am done with this. This is not right. So I went back and checked with the guy who wrote the book. Mm-hmm. And I said, was this your plan? Like, this is how it's supposed to be. He's like, no, no. Who told you that? Well, they told me that. Well, they were wrong. This is how it's supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I started learning what it meant to live in that freedom. And so that discovery for me was transformative.
Mm-hmm.
For you too.
Yeah, definitely.
But you had walked through, like the rest of us, enough to say, this ain't working.
Yeah.
This is not what I was born to do.
Exactly. Kind of thing. I think I found myself doing what everybody else kind of wanted me to be, or the person I thought I should be. You know, everybody does that. Like,
yep.
With all those expectations that are put on you as a child, or, yep. You know, and so then you try and do it, and you try and do it, and then I went, yeah, exactly what you said. Like, this isn't working anymore. So.
And in the Christian life, I'll say, it's trying to be like Jesus. And that's when he said, well, that's stupid. Why are you doing that? Because they told me to do that. Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here comes this part of that, and maybe the center of that for you, then, this discovery of this music among those who discipled you in it, the aforementioned, beloved, dearly departed Aretha Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So was that like a passing thing? Was it a direct connection? I mean, did you kind of go, wow, there's something there for me?
I talk about her specifically a lot. We do one of her tunes in our show, and I kind of talk about this. Aretha was one of those people who brought that soul and the gospel and all that stuff right into your house, like right over the radio station. And I think there was, because like I said, I didn't have much of a option, many options, but she specifically was somebody who I went, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's different. And so that's kind of what I feel. I feel like I've got kind of that same
anointing.
Yeah. Kind of where you can
the mantle.
You can use all of that and still speak to everybody on a level that is just different.
Very
you
cool.
Know?
Well, we're going to let you do that with one of the songs that you've brought along.
All right.
It's called Envy. Tell us about the song.
Envy is, it's an interesting song. I think it can be heard from two places. It's a woman talking either to maybe her spouse or lover, or whatever, about the other woman, or can kind of be seen as the other woman talking to the guy about his wife, just saying, do you talk to her like you talk to me? Do you do these things with her like you would do with me? Do you make, you know, because she's really lamenting this relationship and at kind of at the end of her rope and saying, like, she's kind of done waiting around for this guy.
I've kept you waiting long enough, my friends. Joy Ann Parker, Envy.
Okay. Ooh.
Do you talk to her like you talk to me? Do you tell her that you love her? Say she's all you need. Oh, do you tell her she's the best thing you've ever done? Do you look in her eyes and tell her she's the one? Oh, and do you call her just to hear her speak? Oh, do you talk to her like you talk to me, like you talk to me? Oh, do you touch her like you touch me? Do you hold her body close to yours as you sleep? And does she lay her head down on yours? Do you pull her lips to yours for a sweet kiss? Oh, and do you hold her hand as you walk down the street? Oh, do you touch her like you touch me? Like you touch me? Yeah. Thank you. move her like you move me. Do her eyes light up with fire when you meet? Does her heart pound in her chest when she hears you speak? And does her soul burn when she hears you sing? Oh, and I see you feel her body ache when you leave. Oh, do you move her, touch her, talk to her, love her like you love me, like you love me.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it, lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
If you've just joined us, man, where have you been? Because you've missed out on some good stuff. Joy Ann Parker, performing around the country.
Yeah.
You're in touch with folks. Yeah?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? How do you maintain awareness of all of these people? I mean,
just being real. I think at some point when it gets to be really big, you can't do it as well, but you still can reach out and let them mm-hmm. see you and just be real with them. I think that's what's lacking so much mm-hmm. in social media and stuff is the mm-hmm. genuine quality. Right. So I try, and that's why my shows are pretty laid back as far as I like chatting with people. I like talking to the audience and engaging them. And I usually try and stick around after and talk to people because my music is pretty personal. So they usually, a lot of people have something to talk about after with me, you know, because I talk about my anxiety and depression and things like that. And so they something will click with them and want to talk. So I try and do that. But I try and do Facebook Lives, you know, real life stuff. Just chat with people.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing you've got a number of pieces of music, your songs, available online. But having said this, I should say, if you want to check it out, joyannparker.com. That's simple enough. Even a guy like me can figure that out. Joyann, just like it sounds, parker.com is the place. And looking at several of these installations, you've got... something here called Home Live Video. Tell us about that.
Home is the song I was mentioning. I wrote that after a friend of mine's son completed suicide. And so that's a very personal song that I relate to myself with my struggles mm-hmm. with anxiety and depression in the past. And that one is one of those tunes that people really get moved by because it is so personal to me. And I think that's the best part about writing a song like that is like that people can put themselves in that place right. and you know what I mean, and not just think it's about you. But you can make it about you as well.
Right.
So that's that tune.
Here's another piece, Sinner's Prayer.
That's a Ray Charles cover. That's just a
I think Ray would be grateful for
that's
your
a fun tune
of that song. Folks, I have listened to that, and do yourself a favor, whether you're a blues fan or not, I don't care. You need to listen to Joy Ann Parker because she's going to change your life forever. We've got her here all to ourselves for just a few more minutes. when you think about, and here we've got the amazing Mark Lemoyne with his amazing guitar, being the acoustic instrument it is, the electronic age that has come upon us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the proliferation of how music is produced. Do you ever feel like people are just are losing touch?
I do. And actually, it's interesting because we're going to go in to make a new record. Like the first record is mostly, there's not a lot of production on it. It was us in a basement making the music together. And so with the next record, of course, every time you make a good record like that, that was very successful. So you want to keep making better ones, obviously. And I've had a couple offers from people to, you know, make it very slick, make it. And I kind of wanted to see what that was like. So I went into the studio and I tried it out, and my heart would not leave me alone. It just kept bugging me. I went on vacation for a week. And while I was gone, I just went, I can't do this. I called Mark. I said, you got to tell him I'm not doing it. I will pay him for his time, and I'm not doing it. And I had to find somebody who would just do it the way that my heart's telling me to do it, which is old school. I want to sound like Otis Redding. I want to sound like, you know, I like the mistakes. I like the humanness. I mean, obviously, I don't want a record full of mistakes, but like if something comes out in there that sounds like a human being is making the music, that's cool with me. Because I think that there's just an energy and a soul there that you cannot capture with today's production. I just don't like it. And it's interesting because that record did do so well. And somebody actually said to me once, like, oh, there's too much production. I went, you're crazy because there's no production on that record, which is really funny. But I think that that's really what moves people. Again, it's honesty for me. That's an honest record. It's my band, not a bunch of people coming in.
Right.
My band, no auto-tune, no nothing. We're making honest music. That moves people, that people feel that. They're not even sure what it is, I don't think. They just know they like it.
Well, we've got one more sampling. Joanne Parker, she's got another one here for you. It's called Either Way, and we're going to close the show out today with her performing this for you live here on our own soundstage at moosemagnificat.com. Joanne, thanks for the time and for the gifts, and do something with Mark. He looks so neglected. He's just unappreciated. I mean, you know, put your arm around him. All let right. him know we love him.
All right.
Mark Lemoyne, amazing guitarist that he is, performing here with us. Either way, Joanne Parker. I'll be back with you again next week, folks. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's radio to the world, bringing you all local musicians, all original songs, all the time. That is moosemagnificat.com. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me. Down.
simple question. Well, yes, I expect there was a time. Could go either way.
In 1945, Jack Whiddon started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Whiddon Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Whiddon because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Whiddon Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Whiddon wanted, and it's been the Whiddon way of doing business for over 70 years. Whiddon Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Whiddon Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or whiddenglass.com.